Welcome to episode 192 of the G2 on 5G, the latest insight scoop on everything 5G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend. I'm ringing in from San Francisco, California, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with my first topic, and I want to talk about AWS. And they've had a big cloud core win with Telefonica Germany. So it's 5G cloud core. And basically, Telefonica Germany is going to move all of its 1 million plus subscribers on 5G to the AWS cloud. They're touting this as a first, and it's a first from the standpoint that this is a brownfield network. And we've talked about AT&T and what they are doing with Ericsson, with Open RAN, but this is touted as the first brownfield migration to cloud core. And certainly when you look at Greenfield, and we've talked a lot about Dish in the US, Rakuten in Germany, Reliance in India, this is a big move. It's a big win for AWS. And I don't know what to think about it. It's huge. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a big deal. I think this isn't a new network. This takes a lot of convincing. And if this takes a lot of convincing, then there must be a good value proposition for Telefonica go in this direction. I think it's big, a really big win for AWS. And I think that it was probably not going to be the last one, but it does show that they are continuing to gain momentum with their 5G cloud core.
I agree. A cloudified core brings a lot of advantages from an agility perspective and just the ability to be able to do things a little more software defined over the network. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all rolls out and what benefits come from it. Certainly, there can be some CapEx savings there, some OpEx savings, but it's quite interesting. So we'll keep monitoring this. And if things develop, report back on a future podcast. But let's go to your first topic. And you want to talk about net neutrality. And so there's some new language. We've talked about net neutrality, how that's been reversed from the Trump administration. And you want to talk about how that might affect network pricing, because we've also theorized about that. But yes, we've got more details. We've got more details now. So take it away.
This is part of a final order. This follows the vote that happened last month that we talked about. And the FCC's draft rules were out, but now they have a final version and now contains text that says, we clarify that a BIAS, which is a broadband internet access service provider's decision to speed up on the basis of internet content applications or services, would impair or degrade other content applications or services that are not given the same treatment. So they actually are moving in the direction of network slicing is a problem for consumers, and that the rollout of 5G standalone with network slicing could be affected by that. But the thing is that some of the applications for network slicing that are enterprise based won't be a problem. So might end up that network slicing becomes an enterprise only application and doesn't actually reach consumers. But I actually think what might end up happening is some applications might become enterprise solutions, and then the service becomes entangled with the network slice and then gets offered to consumers. But I feel like that might become a problem with FCC. Here's the problem. It's a 512-page document.
Wow.
And I tried to get Adobe Acrobat to summarize it, but it won't do it because it's over 120 pages. I had Copilot summarize it, and the summary is 2 pages long. But basically, it's all about definitions and open internet access and reclassifying and Title II. And really, in a way, going backwards to the old definition that was a new definition under different administrations. I think there's still going to be a lot of figuring out exactly how this shakes out for ISPs. But right now, it seems like network slicing is dead for consumer applications, but it will very much be alive for enterprise applications, which might have been the killer use case to begin with. I think what ends up happening is maybe there is a network slice for consumer traffic, but it's just to keep consumer traffic separate from all the enterprise traffic. So all consumer traffic gets treated equally, enterprise traffic actually ends up getting treated differently based on location?
Yeah, from my perspective, the majority of the applications and use cases that are going to take advantage of 5G's improvement in massive device support, very low latency and security are in enterprise. And I would argue probably 90%+. And I think things like mobile gaming could stand to benefit. It was interesting because we talked about AT&T's Turbo, and there have been some of its competitors that have come out informally stating that it's just a scheme for AT&T to extract more revenue and ARPU from its subscribers. So it's been, and we theorized on our last podcast that it was a test of the waters here. And the dust hasn't settled on this yet. And I think there are a lot of nuances to it. And at the end of the day, if it's focused on data, like the Turbo offering, boosting the capability of data, that's a lot different than providing prioritization. Let's say in a streaming scenario, you certainly would be anti-competitive to allow, like a Netflix as an example, to have a better tailored latency profile than, say, Max or a competing streaming service. So I do think that the dust is still settling on this, and it'll be interesting to see how things progress. Certainly the FCC, they're knowledgeable about networking 101 and they understand it, but this is a lightning rod. And there are a lot of different people that are weighing in on this, some with solid approaches and solid logic and others not so solid, but it's super interesting.
I was just going to say, so I did something interesting and went through the document and searched for the term network slicing. Guess how many hits I got?
How many?
Zero.
Okay.
So they've gone out of their way to avoid using an industry accepted term that they know is problematic, that they know that everyone's worried about. They don't use the word network slicing. Now, I haven't read through all the different commissioner statements, because each commissioner basically has their own statement. I'm sure maybe they will talk about network slicing.
Sure.
But the fact that a 512 page document about the state of the internet, considering we have standalone and 5G, does not actually mention network slicing a single time is very odd to me. And I feel like it's a very conscious choice.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. I'm sure we're going to be talking about this for quite some time. We did altimeters and 5G and exclusion zones. And so this may be our new exclusion zone topic. But let me go to my second topic. I want to talk about Verizon and their approach to neutral host 5G networks. So there was an announcement this week. Our buddy Mike Dano, he wrote a couple articles. One was around the announcement with Cummins and what Verizon is doing to help build, again, a 5G neutral host network for Cummins. But what's really interesting is Verizon's approach. Basically, a neutral host is designed to replace a more expensive DAS system, and typically it's in venues. And what it allows a venue owner to do is actually own the infrastructure within the facility. And then they're able to monetize that, allowing mobile network operators to connect to that. It's all about improving performance, propagation, latency, throughput, and all of that for video intensive applications. When you're at a Padres game, when I'm at a UT football game, typically those networks, they get oversubscribed and they bomb out. And I've had that experience with F1. I've talked about that. I've written about that on Forbes. But what's really interesting about Verizon's approach with Cummins, and they're sticking to it, there, and again, with Cummins, this is Verizon working with Ericsson. But what's happening is Verizon is owning the infrastructure footprint within Cummins. And so that sort of flies in the face of convention of something being neutral. Typically in these deployments, like at F1, Coda in Austin has contracted with a company called Extenet to install all the hardware, the small cells and all of that. And in that scenario, it's a lease arrangement between Circuit of the Americas and Extenet. But in SoFi Stadium, as an example, beautiful venue, the stadium owner, they own that infrastructure, and it's not anything that's been subsidized by Verizon or that sort of thing. It just, Verizon's competitors, rightly so, are pointing the finger at Verizon to say, hey, it's not neutral if you're owning the deployment and management of that infrastructure within the venue. What are your thoughts here?
It's interesting because I didn't realize that there was a neutral host component to this Cummins announcement.
Yeah.
When I first saw the Cummins announcement, I thought it was just a private 5G network.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw that this was like a neutral host network solution. That's a whole new product from Verizon Business.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting because they use the neutral host network for connecting phones and tablets to public networks of all US carriers. So it's not just specific to Verizon. And then the private 5G network on licensed spectrum is for business critical applications. So they're not even building a private 5G network on unlicensed. They're actually using licensed spectrum.
Right.
So I think that's part of the reason why Verizon is so heavily involved in this, because they're actually anchoring it to licensed spectrum.
And yeah.
I think I saw something where, this anchor tenant for the carrier agnostic neutral host network. Verizon is technical lead for network implementation, responsible for engineering, equipment, and installations.
Not an integrator, but Verizon. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the one doing everything, basically. And it sounds like you said they own the equipment as well. So this is like a private 5G network as a service, because I'm sure that Cummins is going to be paying for this for a long time. There's a lot of recurring revenue, I believe, from
right.
I understand. So they're not calling it as a service, because I'm sure there's a lot of big upfront costs, but I'm sure Verizon's eating some of those upfront costs in order to recover them down the road to a monthly or annual payment.
Yeah, that is likely the scenario for sure. Yeah, it's just interesting. But there's another wrinkle to this. As I waded through both of Mike's articles, millimeter wave is in play here as well. So this just isn't CDRA mid-band. And obviously, Verizon has a pretty, large swath of millimeter wave. That's how they launched their public 5G deployment, was with what they called ultra wideband. And so apparently Cummins has some use cases and applications. I believe they're an engine company, and I probably should have, dug into that. So if you think about millimeter wave and what that could do, that's going to provide extreme low latency for tactile control of robotics and manufacturing automations. Yeah, it's interesting. There are a lot of different nuances to this, but it's anything but neutral. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things shake out. It'll also be interesting to see as Verizon pushes forward with private 5G network services and with neutral host, if this will be a continued trend, or if they'll pull back and allow integrators to do this. But I think your hypothesis is spot on. They're likely subsidizing the infrastructure within Cummins versus, I think with SoFi Stadium, they spent, I don't know how many billions of dollars, was it $3 or $4 billion? They had to dig it into the ground because it was an LAX flight path traffic. And so I don't think in LA, typically money is not an object. I'm sure they had no problem spending whatever they had to spend on the equipment there. But hey, let's go to your second topic. And hey, Apple launched a brand new iPad, and you want to talk about that? I've got a little bit of input on that.
They actually launched 4 new iPads.
Yeah, and two, and new silicon, right? 2 versions of new silicon.
Yes, they launched the iPad Air, and then they launched the iPad Pro. New iPad Pro, in some weird way, is actually thinner and lighter than the iPad Air.
Okay.
That doesn't make sense to me either. The new iPad Pro has a new tandem OLED technology, which has 2 OLED panels stacked on top of each other to make it brighter. On top of that, both Air and the Pro have 5G. However, the Pro is a $200 upgrade. The Air is a $150 upgrade. Even though I can almost guarantee they have the same modem, and there is no millimeter wave on the Pro or the Air, from what I recall. But the M4 is debuting in the Pro as Apple's newest and latest and greatest processor. Usually they debut the M series in the MacBooks, but I believe that because Qualcomm and others are coming with AI PCs in the next month, Apple moved up the release of the M4 to launch in the iPad. So it could counter message AI PC, which they mentioned at least 3 times during the launch. And yeah, I just think that the new iPad is quite nice, but the problem is that iPad OS is still very limited in functionality, and you really can't multitask. So you're limited to software capabilities there. Also, none of the new iPads have Wi-Fi 7, which seems odd because it'll be available nowadays. Broadcom is an Apple's supplier for Wi-Fi, and they have a Wi-Fi 7 chip. So very clearly, Apple decided to make some decisions there. Maybe it would have made it too thick. I don't know. But they also got rid of a camera on iPad Pro, which supposedly also was due to this. So Apple really wanted to watch this as the thinnest Apple device ever shipped. Apple erroneously said it's the thinnest Apple product ever, but they have a cloth and a credit card that are thinner. But as a device, it is the thinnest device they've ever shipped. And yeah, I actually wrote up a whole thing that I'll probably publish in the next couple of days. It's currently at 1,887 words, so it's very detailed. And I talk about how Apple desperately wants to beat the AI PC with the new iPad Pro. So half the article is about the iPad Pro, the other half is about how it's trying to beat the AI PC. It gives you all the details on pricing, which is absurd because if you get the new iPad Pro with the 13-inch model, with the keyboard and 5G, you're looking at $2,000 after tax. Also, thanks for reminding me, unless you buy the 1 terabyte version, you cannot get the full 10-core CPU. You only get the 9-core CPU. Okay. And that's the M4 version. And if you want to have the new nano coating or nano etching anti-glare, you must purchase the 1 terabyte or 2 terabyte version. So you're also looking at $2,500 to $3,000, depending on how you bought. So that's tablet in that price category. So I think for a lot of people, that's not really a starter, but that's also the OLED is the first OLED Apple's used in any of their, we'll see how it goes. This tandem stack is the first time they've used OLED in a tablet or ever used tandem stack. So it's really interesting tech because it lets them do 1,000 nits brightness and 1600 nits peak brightness.
So I'm going to lean into your swim lane a little bit here. You're the expert on devices and I'm the infrastructure guy, but I don't mean to be a hater on Apple, but certainly I follow their very various category sales. And for tablet, for Apple, it's down. And so I view this as Apple's way of trying to put some reinvigoration back into sales. That high-end piece of silicon that they launched on the Pro, it's snappy. It's super fast. But I will say one thing. Of course, they had to talk about AI, right? And you've talked about that already today, about how this is Apple's way to get into the AI device game. It was light for me. They showed some things with images and that sort of thing. And I don't know, what's your take on that? I thought the AI positioning was weak. Did I just miss something?
No, it is super weak. And I think it's because they can't really talk about much on AI until they talk. I feel like they're saving it for, but yeah, I think if you look at what they're trying to do, they're a hardware company. So AI, they're struggling with. Right. Quite clear that they're behind. And I think the M4 was a way for them to try and prove that they have the NPU tops. So they're claiming 38 NPU tops, which they said is faster than any PC or AI PC that's out today, which is exactly accurate, except for the fact that the Snapdragon's coming in the next month will have 45 tops. So they will be bested very soon. And they know this, but they clearly were trying to focus on making it any competitive to the PC as possible without actually acknowledging the future. And the thing is, Apple's used AI for a long time and they like to talk about that. They said they've been doing it for many generations. They also have had OLED technology in the iPhone, but they've never had it in iPad. I think they're trying to show that they already have some experience deploying AI on the mobile side. Now they're going to be doing a lot more AI on the tablet. It was mostly first party apps. So I feel like they still have to work out on how to get developers to really leverage AI capabilities with this 38 tops and how that looks and how these models were. And there's rumors that recently came out that they're going to do some kind of split render or split AI processing, hybrid AI, where they have their own servers running Apple processors that will help process the more computationally challenging workloads and then do as much as they can on device. So that's a whole other topic that we'll probably talk down the road.
Yeah, I'm sure they're saving some of that AI news for, to your point, the Worldwide Developers Conference, but interesting stuff, man. Hey, I'm going to go to my third and final topic. I'm going to make this one quick, but we've talked about Tesla on a prior podcast and their desire to deploy a private 5G network within all of their manufacturing facilities. And recently, the company dropped a 78-second video that talks about private 5G, but is it just for show? That was my first thought. So as I looked at it, there's nothing new there. And it's almost like a bumper sticker or an advertisement that kind of states, look at Tesla, we're embracing industry 4.0. Hey, 5G is going to be great for manufacturing automation. Our viewers and listeners know that because we talk about that use case all the time. I'm wondering, does this coincide with the fact that there's been a lot of negative press coming out of Tesla lately? They had a big win in China recently with self-driving, and I don't know what level, you know, of autonomy that was, but that was a big hurdle. The stock bounced up to close to $200 a share. And then there's just been a spate of announcements with layoffs, and starting with, I think, the supercharging team,
marketing team,
and it just continues to go. Yeah. And the marketing team, and it just continues on and on. From my perspective, the timing of this video drop was quite interesting. And we will definitely include this when we post the podcast so our viewers and listeners can take a peek at it. But what do you think? You think this is just for show?
Yeah, interesting, because they have a network team. So they actually have people who are dedicated to deploying the network, the 5G network in GigaBerlin. It does feel very much like a highlight reel. Lots of.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that, because this was in Germany. And by the way, Germany is very technology savvy, right? They're one of the leading regions in the world. And when you look at the automobile manufacturing complex in Germany, when you look at Mercedes and BMW and others, they're already deploying private cellular networks in a lot of those facilities. So
yeah,
one internet tool. Sorry.
I think they're a bit of a follower here, if you consider it a market, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're an innovator in the US. In Germany, it seems BMW, Mercedes have already done this.
Yeah.
So I think it's them showing that they are moving forward and optimizing their deployment of their factory, but with a lot of B-roll footage. And what's funny is, one of the applications that they're using is just to keep the cars connected to the internet so they can keep them updated before.
For OTA. Yeah. Huh?
So that's like the most low hanging fruit possible, but like, I agree, it's a good application. And I think that we're going to see a lot more inside the factory too, but it's a net positive, and I don't really think it should really change Tesla's stock price at all. But
no.
Yeah, I think it's a net positive. And then I think the auto industry is moving forecast. And we'll see if other car makers follow suit.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go ahead and your third and final. And this, when I saw this, was an aha moment for me, but there are rumors that US Cellular may be selling itself to potentially partially to T-Mobile and possibly Verizon as well.
Yeah. So this is a Wall Street Journal article that everybody else started sharing. Mm-hmm. Basically it's that T-Mobile is looking to buy a chunk of US Cellular, and that Verizon is potentially looking to buy the rest of it. US Cellular is definitely not a big carrier. They are a very distant fourth, I believe. They might not be fourth anymore because of Comcast and Charter, but they only have 4 million subscribers in 21 states.
Mostly a rural footprint as well, which is interesting. Is T-Mobile, are they going to snap up that rural footprint?
I think they are. I think that's why they're trying to buy them. But yeah, they have 4,000 towers that weren't part of the latest sale talks. This could be actually a fairly cheap buy for T-Mobile Verizon. And mm-hmm. I think part of the reason why it's a split deal is because they're trying to find a way to get this deal to go through without having regulators shoot it down. And by all the assets not going to one carrier, I think the idea is that they would,
wouldn't be as anti-competitive for sure.
Yeah. But the truth is, having a carrier that only has 4 million customers, it's not really competitive either. So I think the Sprint deal was a good one for the industry. Positive. Look at the state of the 5G today in the US. I think T-Mobile's acquisition of Sprint moved the industry forward. I think we're definitely in a position where things will improve, and hopefully that this acquisition will go through and that maybe another player enters the scene and potentially offers a better deal or has a better plan. But I think mm-hmm. we all knew that U.S. Cellular was going to be up for sale sometime soon.
I think actually you and I may have theorized at that very point a year ago or so, but it just seems to me that U.S. Cellular just, they were dog paddling and they couldn't get over the hump to be able to invest what they needed to invest to improve service and coverage for their current customer base. And I would recall just when I would share my insights on U.S. Cellular on social, I would usually get a lot of replies back around, yeah, I'm a subscriber. It's been terrible forever and blah, blah, blah. They're not making the investments. And it's probably just been a financial hurdle for them. And they're just not big enough to be able to scale up and, you know, spend, you know, what's needed to put the proper investment of infrastructure into their network. So this will be interesting, something that we'll definitely monitor, and it will be interesting. I do believe that if both T-Mobile and Verizon are involved in splitting up U.S. Cellular, then I think that fares a lot better with regulators than if it were just to be T-Mobile or just to be Verizon. But yeah, I mean, you got me thinking as well. It's okay, U.S. Cellular, they have a rural footprint. T-Mobile has been very focused on rural and investing in rural. You could argue that AT&T has been as well, with what they're doing with the billions of dollars that AT&T is investing in Digital Divide. But this is interesting. So we'll have to definitely keep monitoring this situation. But hey, man, before we wrap up, I just got to share a funny anecdote with you. So like I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I'm in San Francisco. I'm actually here for the RSA conference. It's considered the largest industry cybersecurity conference. Black Hat's pretty big, but not quite as big. So I've been here all week because security is my other coverage area. And as I left the hotel today, I'm in Nob Hill. I noticed that the San Francisco Police Department, they were setting up barricades and it was causing some confusion with rideshare. But I got to the Moscone and I spent about half the day there. And when I came back, there were barricades everywhere and there were police officers everywhere. In fact, I had to get dropped off about a block away from the Fairmont Hotel. And as I'm walking up, I see Secret Service people. They're wearing the vest with U.S. Secret Service on the back. And I walked up and said, hey, I don't know if you can answer my question, but what's going on? And they told me there's an important dignitary coming to town. And I go, would that be the POTUS? And the guy replied, it's like, I can either confirm or deny that. And sure enough, I got on my thought as I'm walking into the hotel. And yeah, President Biden is flying in tonight. And it should make for a very interesting ride to the airport tomorrow for me, if the 101 is barricaded for the presidential motorcade. I hope I get home, but I just thought I'd share that with you. And then I'm off later in the month to Dell Tech World, but if you and I will be there, we plan to do a podcast there as well. But where else are you headed after Dell?
I'm headed to Austin for ARM. So
awesome. I will be there.
Be in your hometown.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. That's what we do as analysts, man. Yeah, I think we gauge our performance based on the amount of airline travel that we log in. But hey, it's been a great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights for a specific 5G topic for a future podcast, please reach out to us on social media. Will's at Will Tone Tech, and I'm at Alex Shilsaw. We hope you have a great weekend, and please tune again next week. And don't forget to rate us and subscribe.